Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schrankelberg.
And this is Enrico Belmonte.
Hey, Enrico. It's good talking to you again. I think I've been mentioning in the last, I don't know how many episodes, I have a stack of comments and questions that have come in. And I thought, well, this one, you know, I think you and I have both had experience with data collection. And sometimes it's easy and sometimes not at all. And so we got a question from Abi, A-B-E. So I apologize if I'm not pronouncing it right. But a very nice message. It was, you know, as he said, every time I visit a Sendo Reliability site, I feel both lucky and surprised. And I was like, okay, that's a nice opening. And then he goes on to say, I feel lucky because it's such a great resource. And so I thought, oh, cool. Testimonial. And he talked about he had no previous experience with reliability and he ran across the site and he's been learning all kinds of good stuff. And then he said, I'm surprised because such high quality material is available for free. Well, that's the point. That's the idea. If you can do a better job because you learn something on the site, we all benefit. You know, things last longer, things are safer, all kinds of good stuff happens. And so then he goes on to say, well, I'm in asset reliability. He's working on an oil refinery. And he's talking about the stuff he's trying to do in modeling and time to failure analysis, stuff like that. And he says, the hardest part, the hardest and most painful part of all this is the data collection. It takes so much time and energy. And then he goes on, in your experience, has data gathering always been the most challenging step? And I was like, well, that's a good question. And my first thought, my first response to him was, you're right. If it's not already part of the system and seen as valuable, then you got to set it up. You got to prove that it's useful in some way or go find the data or whatever. But even with the best of systems, I found is then there's still the cleaning the data, which I think is outside his question. But just getting data, you know, you got an oil refinery, we got, you know, all these valves and pumps and all these different stuff going on. You would think there would be records there somewhere. This stuff would be recorded.
Yeah. First of all, I need to confirm that the material documents and webinars that are available on Exchange Reliability are really valuable. Well, that was the same reaction I had the first time I visited some years ago, Chain Reliability. And I think it's a really good platform for people that want to know more about reliability. And, you know, it's also pretty easy to get in touch with all different experts.
Thank you. And it was really intended to be, you know, not just post it and then there's nobody behind it. So if you ask a question, it doesn't go anywhere. No, I think the intentional design and the people that are regular contributors understand that. That's the contract. And it benefits us because we get our name known. We get to be recognized in our industry. We get, and there's all kinds of benefits that we get. And even a new author, I think Chris Ware came on the site a couple months ago and is starting to post articles, and he's already getting comments and feedback and so on. If he's doing that on his own site, it's really hard to be found. Hopefully it shows up as a virtuous circle where people want to contribute to the site because it's useful for them, and people visit the site because it's valuable to them. And I so far, so good.
And coming now to the point, the question that Abi asked, there are different perspectives. It's a big topic, right? And
it is. Yeah.
The first point I want to address is the following. So data are more available by far right now when compared to like 5 years ago, because all different components are connected and they are continuously sending the data to the cloud. And because there are, for example, the infrastructure, so there is a cloud infrastructure that is something established right now, but it was not like that like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And is and the availability of data is also shaping the role of a reliability engineer. For example, I visited some conferences in these years, and I see an increasingly number of people doing PHM, prognostic health management, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When compared to the classic design for reliability guys, right? I don't think that one is better than the other, but of course, dealing having this data enable us, a reliability engineer, to apply new approaches which are specific for specific components, right? So we can monitor over time how components behave, if they degrade, if they derate, and so on. That's definitely something we need to take into account, and this is also shaping the competences a reliability engineer should have, right? It's not like mm-hmm. it's not just damage mechanism, but it's also data comprehension and application.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And it's, you're right. There's a downside to it too. I was in a factory a couple of years ago, and they had so many sensors on their system looking for downing events or misalignments or just, you know, all kinds of stuff. And it would record, oh, it's good. It's good. It's good. Oh, that's a little off. It's good. It's good. It's a little off. It's good. And that was just one of like 400 sensors on this line, and it all went into a great big storage unit, but nobody looked at it because it was a terabyte of data every day.
That's a good point. Yeah, so we are creating a lot of data, but no there are not so many people able to deal with this data, and especially reliability engineers, you know, to transfer this data to reliability is something a little bit on the edge, I would say, as competence. And and I would say one important implication is that you can derive mission profiles based on data, which is definitely great when compared to a survey or assumption. And you can get also, you can monitor degradation through data. Of course, you know, to collect data is not easy. You need some organization doing that, because you need to first of all integrate in the software and the firmware what are the variables you want to store. Then you have to prove that the data are collected properly in the cloud, and then they are communicated to whatever you use.
I think that's more of the, I'd back up a whole step, and I think there's a couple other scenarios we got to consider too. But either whatever way the data is or isn't being collected, and what condition it is, and on so on, is you still got to start with what is it I really need to do. I mean, collecting data is fun and painful and difficult, just as Abby said. But to what point? What are we trying to do? And part of his question, he was talking about, you know, learning time to failure analysis, and, you know, using repairable systems and data analysis. So he needs time to failure information kinds of things, right? So just knowing that, well, what am I trying to do? Am I trying to create a model to check on availability of the system? Do I really need time to failure data to do that? Or is my sensors tell me when it's working and when it's not working? I can use that as the measure. So it's, I always start, when you're starting talking about data, is to what point? What question am I trying to answer? You know, what kind of analysis do we need the data for? What are we trying to do? Are we trying to create an ongoing tracking system of availability or reliability? Or are we changing a maintenance practice and want to detect whether it's improving or harming the system overall? Or different maintenance techniques or different equipment styles? You know, what is it we're really trying to do? Is it comparisons? Yeah. Is it tracking or what? Then back up and say, all right, what analysis do I need to do? What data is needed for that analysis? And I've seen way too many people that say, oh, I sell a vibration sensor. Well, I'll sell you 1,000 of these, put them on everything, and then you'll have all kinds of data. Well,
yeah.
What am I going to do with vibration data? I mean, they don't have the analysis. They can show you the signal that you get, but then they don't tell you whether that's good or not good.
Yeah.
And so you get, that's part of the problems. What am I going to do with it?
Yeah, I partially agree with you, Fred, on this topic, because generally the data acquisition is not driven by reliability engineers.
That's true. And you know, let's say it's a maintenance team, and they're looking at the frequency of corrective maintenance events and how long it takes to do it. So they're collecting, oh, I got to replace this pump. And if they have a computer maintenance management system, I think that's what CMS stands for, is we know that pump A failed. And if we have a reasonable system there, we know when pump A went into service. But we might not know how often that pump is actually active or used, or, you know, what its use cycles are. So we might not have, if we use just maintenance data, because the maintenance team is tracking that and looking at their workloads and things like that, or if we're in a consumer product and we have a warranty system and we get warranty returns and it says, well, they return it because it's not working. It doesn't tell us why it's not working.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all that terribly. We can use it, yet it's not as informed as we are. I agree. There's all kinds of parts of our organization that track data that we can tap into and use, yet it may not be sufficient for what your objective is. What are you trying to accomplish?
That's true. So you might have a partial data. So and as a reliability engineer, you might have some data which are interesting for your analysis, some data that are missing. Definitely, this is the case, and that is, I think, is prompting us to suggest a data organization, you know, in the company. So it's not because we need to create multiple organization, but because there are multiple stakeholders on data. But generally, the organization, the data organization, are not built or created, including the needs of all the stakeholders, because, you know, as we have said so far, reliability engineer, they didn't use data from connected from connected components and so on. So they have, if you apply design for reliability concept, the classic one, they are not based on data driven approach
as much.
So there's something that is growing and is probably is bringing the organization to create a product team and a data team that is involving multiple stakeholders, and this is the way how to get the proper data without exceeding the acquisition, because all this data, it means it's equal to cost, right?
Cost,
and if you're exceeding high frequency, or you are filling the cloud with data you're not going to use, but you know, organization needs a certain level of maturity. Right. So, but if we move back to the reliability, the colleague said, so Abby says that's pretty a nightmare to get the data and to get good data, you know. And that's, I think, I really agree with this point, because, you know, getting good data, it requires to know how the product works, how it operates, right? And you need to know what is the function of the product, which frequency is going to return some data, which data are important, which not, you know. And, you know, and we might have a lot of quality issues in the data itself. So you need support as engineer. You cannot do everything by yourself. Yeah?
Oh, no. And I'm thinking of an oil refinery that's, you know, a hectare large facility, and it's got pipes and vats and valves and pumps and motors everywhere, right? And sensors everywhere. There's part of it starts, though, of, I mean, being a stakeholder and influencing what gets collected and how well it gets collected is, I always go back to, especially in a factory setting, is if I'm counting on a maintenance tech or an operator to collect data for me, it has to benefit them in some way. It has to be useful for them in some way.
Yeah.
You know, and at, I remember when I was first working in the industry out of the military, and I was working in a factory, and I'm, you know, trying to determine, did this change we make any difference or all? And I'm asking the operators to help me collect some data on it. And they're like, why would I do this? This takes extra time away from what I'm supposed to be doing. And I said, do you like all the defects that you have to deal with and scrap all this material and everything else? No, I don't like that at all. I says, right, I'm trying to tell if this experiment is actually going to benefit that or not. And hopefully you can see it, but I need numbers to prove it. And then it makes your life better because you have better product to work with and it doesn't have all these exceptions. And she was like, oh, okay, what do you really need? What kind of data do you need? And she was all in. And other times it's, you got to talk to management about it. You know, I really do need these sensors and a system to collect it. Here's what I'm going to use the data for. Here's the type of decisions that it'll enable you to make. Here's how it will save us money or time or effort or whatever. But if we don't have a good what's in it for you kind of story to get other people on board with it, we can complain all day long and we're not going to get any better data.
Yeah. And you're touching a really good point. Namely, I want to exaggerate a little bit, but, you know, data people, they don't talk to product people, pre-people, no. Basically. No?
Give me a spreadsheet. I'm happy. That's all they want. You know?
they are coming from different worlds, right? Like, male and female,
we love
right?
all our data analysts. You know, people, they're essential. They're great people. They're fun at a party, but yeah, they just like data.
Yeah, they like, and the integration of data, so in reliability is a typical product related activity, right? Because something needs to fail, no? There is some crack, there is some plastic metal, so you need
or
to deal
seal
with this kind of
it's or, not, yeah, whatever.
It's not cloud reliability, which is a different thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, to bring these people together, so people with data expertise and people with product expertise, is a quite a challenge for the organization, you know.
I found putting food in the conference room really helps. They both seem to show up for that. Engineers work for food. So back to Avi, is that one, yes, it is. It getting started to get exactly what you want, good quality data, it's not always immediately available. And like you said, Enrico, it has to be a pretty mature organization to understand that. But you can take steps, go collect it manually, and just prove that it's useful, right? Talk to people about why you're doing it, what's in it for them, make the business case. And move one step at a time and one person at a time to convince that this is actually useful and this is what it's for. And it begs the question, though, is if the analysis you're doing is never going to be used, then don't do it. Go find something else to work on. Do better failure analysis or something else. But it starts with it's got to be useful from the onset and clear, able to explain it clearly to other people what it's for. Because it does take time and energy and money to set up, to add sensors, to collect data, to make a measurement and write it down accurately, to report it correctly. All those things matter. And if it has no purpose, then there's no reason to do it. And most people can see that pretty quickly. So I'd start with that. And then, yes, it's going to be a trouble to start. It's just getting the data from wherever it happens to exist. Partial data, what can you do with that? Noisy data or incomplete data, there's techniques to deal with that and things. It becomes more that data analyst side of things as to how do I deal with this mess of information I'm getting.
But at this point, there's a big advantage, which is the the GPT, the large language model, you know, mm-hmm, that we mm-hmm. are currently, they are extremely powerful for in the data analysis, you know. So, I mean, you can really do data analysis by prompt and not coding anymore, mm-hmm. which is accelerating the time in a way that was not possible just a couple of years ago. And that is encouraging reliability engineer to deal with data, because all the data science part, yeah, I wouldn't say that is trivial, because it's, you need competent people, but right. the advent of GPTs is accelerating it massively, you know.
Yep.
So then you can really do filtering, quality issues, subsampling, you can address data quality issue in a matter of minutes, right? And that is a big advantage that current engineers have and should also use.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I was wondering if you were going to bring up AI systems at some point. It's not going to make the case for you. It's not going to help you explain why it's useful or why we need this data collected in the start part of it.
I would say try to ask. The AI could be also really creative regarding the data.
Oh, so and help you form arguments. That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So I would suggest Abby to describe the scenario he's working in. Oil systems. So with valves and pumps and so on, and ask AI how he could use data. Yeah. Coming from those components, it might be really creative. He could get a lot of good insights and hints to work mm-hmm. with. Yeah? So you know, the conversation with AI is not just reproducing a task that you already have really clear in mind, but it's more than that. It's like exploration of concept, exploration of new ideas, of new solution, and that's where it's really powerful.
Okay, yeah, no, it's like an extra brainstorm person in the room with
which is really knowledgeable. Yeah, it's really, really knowledgeable.
What would be funny is if it's like your competitor's factory's got all this data online and you could tap into that going, we use those pumps. Oh, okay. I think some people fear it that way too, because if you load it all up into the AI, then it's available for other people.
Yeah, you don't need to upload data on AI. You can work on a conceptual topic.
Yeah.
You know, no,
and that's safer. That's much safer. Yeah,
yeah. That is not any know-how you are sharing with the AI. Is to conversate in order to understand what can be the potential solution in terms of statistical analysis, in terms of, you know, what are potential outcomes of analysis, you know. And you can also work with artificial data set, which is really helpful for understanding what might be the result we can mm-hmm, expect. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, lots of options there. I think the bottom line, though, Avi, yes, it tends, you know, once you get a good data set and you have good tools to analyze it and you want a Weibull plot, for example, it's kind of a letdown. It only takes a few seconds. It just works.
Yeah.
But I remember the first time I used it, I pushed the button and it to analyze and it said, oh, you can't have alphanumerics. You can't have characters instead of numerics in these fields. And it was some of the data had O's. The letter O instead of a zero, the way it was input.
Yeah, that's a typical filtering. But you know, if the AI can do that for
right.
you,
and then the next one was somebody forgot they put a comma in instead of a period,
yeah.
or it was dozens of things like that. And it took me about 3 hours to finally go, okay, now I got a plot that actually I think is real. And looks like the data and stuff like that. But when you get a good data set, it's really fast. It is true. Sometimes, and I more often than I care to admit, it is cleaning up the data. I got to learn more about AI to do that. to get good data from the start, and then backing up even further is getting the right data for what you're trying to do. Then those steps all deal with working with other people, working with good systems, good, you know, making sure there's not errors built into it or biases built into it. All of those things matter. And as you were talking about, Enrico, that's really data analysts, data collecting type people really understand all the nuances of that. But yeah, at the end of the day, you're going to have to deal with what you got and then build out from there. And to show that what you would like to have improved in the data sets is of use, is of value. And that is about the only way I know that it makes sense. It's companies aren't interested in you going off to play with data just because it's fun. They want results. They want meaningful information. And so it's keep that in mind as you work to improve the data sets that you're getting and able to use. But
great summary, Fred.
Yeah, good. So I'm thinking is, you know, and I'm sure Abhi's not the only one dealing with having to get good data. You know, if others have got other techniques or hints you'd like to pass along, Abhi, or to our community, let us know. Or if you've got questions about it or specific types of systems of data sets that you'd like to find or you know, working on or struggling with, let us know. We'd love to talk about it and hopefully give you some answers and pointers as you get started with it. And you can do that over at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. A couple of ways to get in touch with us. Enrico and I and the other hosts of the show are available through LinkedIn and our About pages. And, you know, I should actually log how many questions we get per month or something like that.
That would be great, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Kind of see if we were on an upward change our marketing to gas better, you know, get more questions in or something. Another
Thank
day.
Thank you, Fred, for the discussion. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Enrico. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.